Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hi there, I'm Janet. Welcome to The Good Place, the podcast.
Janet, what is a podcast?
It's like the radio, but there's no music, and literally anyone can do one at any moment about any subject. And there's a billion of them.
Sounds great. Hope you enjoy this week's episode.
Welcome to The Good Place, the podcast. I'm Mark Evan Jackson. I play Sean. A quick programming note. Starting next week, The Good Place, the podcast, in order to sync up with season 3, will begin releasing 2 podcast episodes per week. You're welcome. Today we're talking about Chapter 9, Someone Like Me as a Member. Directed by Dean Holland, includes guest cast Sunita Mani, Emily Arluck, Jackie Tone, Zeke Nicholson, Adam Scott, and Tia Sirkar. In summary, Tahani helps Michael to be a tougher negotiator with the representatives of the bad place. Real Eleanor, Chidi, fake Eleanor, and Trevor go on a double date. Jason and Janet bond. In flashbacks, we see moments from Eleanor's life from high school to adulthood, where she avoided being part of a group, and how that adversely affected her life. My guests today are writer of the episode, Jen Statsky, and Tia Sirkar, who plays Real Eleanor. Jen and Tia, welcome. Everything is fine.
Hi.
Hello.
Jen, we have to address it right out of the gate. You're on the podcast.
Okay, yeah.
So, I've been getting a lot of feedback from all the other writers that whenever they go back to the writer's room, they immediately are confronted with you saying, how was it? Was it fun?
Yeah. So I, as long as this podcast has been going, other writers have been invited to come on the podcast. And even though I know it's going in order of how the episodes are written season 1, I'm furious with you.
Oh, understandable.
Yeah.
Sure. Uh-huh.
And I'm very upset. And so I've been constantly commenting, just being like, oh, wow, you're leaving to do the podcast. Okay, well, I'll stay here and do the work. Yeah, go. You go do the podcast, Megan, Joe, Josh, Dylan. The list goes on. It's basically all the writers besides me.
But it's a lot of them.
Yeah. It's a lot of them, yeah.
I know that you're kidding, but I do love that moments before we began, it's important to be on the podcast that you half jokingly said, what if I had a heart attack right now?
I was like, it would be so perfect if all this bit led up to was that the moment before I was going to be on the podcast, I just like had a heart attack and never got to do it.
Tia, you play the real Eleanor, the saintly Eleanor Shellstrop.
I do.
That was, we have a lot to talk about your trajectory through the knowledge of what happens at the end of season 1 and the real story. What were you told this role was when you auditioned? When it was offered to you, what have you?
I don't think I was told anything. I got some material, you know, I think maybe there was a character description. Jen, you might know.
Were they fake sides? Were they dummy sides?
They were fake sides, for sure.
Much like basically all of the cast besides Kristen and Ted. And I don't know if you auditioned with fake sides. Maybe
I
not.
I didn't know.
Oh, no, you were, because Mike, yeah. You're
but you just didn't know anything.
But basically for every character, we wrote fake sides all throughout season 1. And so, yeah, I believe your character was someone like a humanitarian worker who had been captured and were in captivity, but had just like an super positive, super cheery attitude about your captors.
Yes.
You made friends with the gnats living in your hair.
Yes.
Like you were just super positive, right?
Correct. Yes, that's exactly right. And also, this is a fun fact that no one actually knows.
Ooh.
I had
podcast exclusive.
I had what I thought was insider information because, strangely enough, I auditioned to play Tahani.
Really?
And it went, I mean, horribly wrong. Like, I'm and then when I saw the pilot, I was like, oh, yes, this makes infinitely more much more sense, like, you know, that Jamila would play Tahani. I was like, that's who they were looking for. Mine was, yeah.
But it was, but I remember, I now remember that. I think Mike really loving you and you as an actor and what you, so, like, I think that is also why you were then in the, it was like, oh, she should be this part we have.
Well, Mike has a long track record of that.
Yes. Wonderful. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
I'm shocked that it happened off of that audition.
So when you say it went horribly, like, now we have to.
No. I don't mean it was a horrible audition. I just was so horribly wrong for that part.
Sure.
You know, I don't think I, like, you know, really, like, screwed the pooch on the audition. I just, like, when I saw Jamila's Tahani, it just made a lot of sense what that role was.
Right.
And I was so not that. But so I thought I knew a little something about the show. And so when I got this, you know, the material about this humanitarian who was a prisoner of war.
Yeah.
Or rather just like held captive by terrorists, I assumed. And so I made a lot of assumptions. And I was like, I'm definitely right about this.
You were like, well, this definitely sounds like a very funny comedy
show.
No,
but I knew that they were in the afterlife. But I had like sort of heard that in the process of auditioning for the pilot. So I was like, okay, they're in heaven. And I don't know. I thought I had it all figured out. I did not. But the essence of that person was definitely like the scene in which I'm talking about my, you know, when in this episode 109, when I'm talking about my parents and the shell straps and all that. It's very much the same person, but none of the material itself is the same.
Right. But it's the same general comedic take of someone who's been through the worst possible situation in the world and is still just like super cheery
very
and positive.
Side.
Yeah. And not down on it.
I think that that is a very important point for people in the creative arts, but also in all of life. Like, why not take a chance? Do you know what I mean? Like, I, early on in my career, would go out for things and I'd read the breakdown, I'd read the character description and be like, I'm all wrong for this. What am I doing? This is such a waste of time. And it took me a long time, but I finally realized, like, you're not auditioning for that role. You're auditioning to meet these people and make other connections kind of thing. So go in that room and do whatever you can do that only you can do, what makes you unique, and go give it your all because they're going to remember that. Like, maybe you are totally wrong. I used to sit in waiting rooms with, you know, dudes that were half my height or 100 pounds heavier or whatever, totally different ethnicities or whatever. And I'd be like, what am I doing? This is so silly. And it took me a long time to realize, like, there's benefit in this.
Oh, totally.
Meet people. Go be you.
I'm glad you said that. It's actually nice for me to hear that because, I mean, as you might imagine, that happens to me all the time. You know, it's rare that I'm in a room with people who look like me. And it's more often, you know, the case where I'm like, what am I doing here? And how could this role possibly be, you know, how could I ever be cast as this person? But you're right. You never know.
Yeah. And we certainly, the writers, and especially Mike is big on this, like whenever we have someone come in and even if we're like, no, it doesn't work for this, we're always like, okay, we have a folder called like where we put auditions of people that were like, okay, not for this role, but absolutely we should think of them for other roles because you can tell they're great. And
does that folder have a name?
I believe it's...
Is it filthy? Is it
no,
a filthy
no,
name?
It's very...
Is it called Better Luck Next Time?
It's very appropriate. It's called the Good for Something folder.
Oh, I love
like,
that.
Like they're good for something. We should cast them in something.
Any actor listening to this podcast right now, this is like...
Yes,
I mean,
absolutely.
For me, this is like a revelation.
Yeah. No,
even though I've been doing this for a long time.
Right. It's probably horrible. I'm not an actor, but I imagine, like you're saying, it's probably really sad to be like, oh, you go in, you give an audition. Of course I wasn't right. And now that's just time
that's
wasted.
That, yeah.
I drove to Santa Monica. But it's like.
Santa Monica is always the example.
It's always Santa Monica.
It's always the example of.
Yeah. I've never auditioned for anything, but I assume they're all in Santa Monica. But like, yeah, we do. We look at people and we're like, oh, that they have something. They'll be good for something
nice.
Down the road. Absolutely.
That's great to know.
I love it.
Great to know.
I mean, my own experience in the Mike Shuraverse is definitely that. Like I went out for something small and then suddenly got, you know, offered things and called back for things. And
yeah,
they notice. Someone is watching. Someone is keeping score.
And that person is Mike Shura.
And his name is Mike Shura.
Yeah, we know who it is. It's Mike.
So nothing you read at this point said, or did it at this point, say real Eleanor? Was your character named that?
I don't think so.
I don't
think
so.
I think we kept it. Yeah, I think it was a different fake name because we were pretty tight-lipped about the whole like season one.
Yeah. Mike talked in the first episode of this podcast about having to bring you back to go, hi,
here's
it's
the
a little different. Yeah. How many episodes had you done before that meeting happened?
Before the Vicky meeting?
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, the Vicky meeting is a great way to phrase it.
Well, I thought I was in trouble. I mean, I literally, we had a, so the week prior was when, you know, Kristen's video of Mike breaking the news to the rest of the cast that's gone viral now. Mm-hmm. A week later, because I wasn't in that episode, I don't think. So a week later, we had a table read, and Mike and Morgan Sackett, the executive producer, another executive producer, asked me to stay back to talk to them. And we were in that mansion that had that, like, very formal dining room
Tahani,
that felt like Tahani's mansion,
yeah, mansion.
That felt like a sort of like a... I don't know. I just felt like I had done something wrong
for
and
sure.
I was in trouble.
That's
and like I was maybe getting fired.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh my goodness. That's what you would think.
Actually, it was Morgan, Drew, and Mike.
Oh, my goodness.
Sat me
you're
down.
Like, it's over.
And
it's
it felt, over. Yeah, it felt like a conference table. So it just felt, I was like on one end and they were, it was very intimidating and scary. But then, yeah, he said, so here's the thing. And he gave me the spiel. And I was like, I mean, just shell shocked. And so then he told me about Vicky, but I didn't really know about Vicky until my next meeting, like that one that took place before season two.
Okay.
Which we can wait to talk about, I suppose.
I suppose, no, let's talk about it now.
Well, the first meeting in Tahani's formal dining room was basically like, hey, the good place is the bad place, and here's who you are, which was you know, I was delighted and also shocked. But, you know, we don't really find out anything about Vicky. Like,
right.
I don't know that Vicky's like a megalomaniac, you know, or
right.
anything like that.
Right,
that
right.
stuff all happened right before season two,
yeah.
like maybe a couple weeks before Mike had me come in to his office and chat, and he told me about Vicky and her trajectory for season two. But actually, for season one, for Real Eleanor, he actually had me come into his office, and we had like a very lovely, you know, chat about life and our families and our backgrounds and books and things. And then he was like, so here's the thing, you're the real Eleanor, and there's been a mistake. And so yeah, he gave me the scoop. It was
so information has just been doled out to you in chunks across
parsed out. As I'm on a need to know basis, and generally I do not need to know until I need to know.
That is an interesting thing that listeners may not realize, because people will stop me in airports and ask me what's season three, and it's like, oh, first of all, no.
nice try.
But also, when you recur on a program like Tia and I do on this one, you only are handed scripts that you're in. You don't get sent the entire season's worth of stuff. So there's plenty we don't know often.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff that I love in this episode is that we find out that, you know, this house, the clown house, was built for Real Eleanor,
yeah.
and you love it. Like, it's like, oh, I would have done just this. So much so that you intuitively know where the stair button is. Like, there are such great details.
And I just wish I had a clown nook. Oh, there it is.
Yeah, yeah. It was so satisfying to imagine, like, finally seeing this person at this weird, bizarre house that, like, who would want to live in this, finally gets to see it and is so into it and knows everything. Like, yeah, just your intuition is like, oh, yeah, of course, the button for the stairs. It's right there. Yeah, that was a very fun payoff.
And those are seeds that were planted.
Yeah, that's another fun. I remember we were talking about that in the writer's room, being like, this is a joke that's like a 10 episode payoff. It's like you introduce it in the pilot that there's weird no stairs up to her bedroom, and then it's 9 episodes later that we sort of pay it off. But I guess it was worth it.
Oh, it's entirely worth it. A lot of the questions that I got from the internet to ask you today, Tia.
Okay.
90% of the questions were the statement, I love you on Star Wars Rebels.
Okay. Well, thanks, guys.
But 90% of the ones that were actually questions were saying, did you feel betrayed? Or did you feel disappointed when you found out that you were, in fact, Vicky?
No. I was so excited. I mean, I had such a nice time playing Real Eleanor. Because, you know, it's nice to play the nicest human on the planet Earth, or I guess in the afterlife. But, yeah, when Mike gave me the pitch for who Vicky was, I was very, very excited. And I did not feel I don't want to say too much because some of his pitch might be a little controversial. Like how it was pitched to
me. Is that right? This will be excised. You can say whatever you want.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I can?
Speak freely.
Oh, like, she's Donald Trump.
Oh, right.
There's
oh, wow.
a moment when I tell Michael, like, I don't – what is this? I'm not here to do, yes. like, homework.
Yes.
I
right.
want one page with pictures and, yeah, like, she's,
yeah.
she's
so
a,
season two,
an egomaniac, like,
yeah.
a megalomaniac.
Yes,
like
you turn
Donald
into
Trump.
An egomaniac season two when you took over the neighborhood.
Yeah.
You essentially weren't doing your home. You wouldn't read anything. So yeah. Michael was able to keep up the charade that he was still torturing the four humans, even
right.
though, as we know, they became Team Cockroach and were working
right.
together. And, yes, we were like, oh, yeah, Vicky's just Donald Trump. She can't – she probably can't read. I mean, he can't read. But even if he can,
she can't
he
be bothered
does,
to read.
Can't be bothered to read, has the utmost confidence in herself. Why would I need to read that? Everything's going perfectly. So, yes, we did. We were like, yeah, that's who she is. She's not even looking at these reports that he's producing.
How much fun was it writing for the Bad Place crew? Those are a bunch
it
of
was,
idiots.
It was amazing. It was like a true gift as a – I mean, the most fun thing as a comedy writer is to write A, stupid people.
Yeah.
Jason Mendoza.
Yeah.
Or B, just like absolutely
shirty
douchebags. Like, it's so fun. And it's so, they were just like the worst humans. Like, we were like, great. Or not humans, they're demons. But we were like, what are the worst traits? And it's just like, yeah, they're always on their phone. They're not listening. They're horrible. They do karaoke to the Nixon tapes. It was so fun.
That was fascinating.
Yeah.
I have so many questions about the Nixon tapes. Was that a Nixon impersonator or were those – because that was better audio than the Nixon tapes.
I believe that – I'm trying to think. We shot it a couple ways on the day. We had Emily and Sunita actually do Nixon impressions. So we shot it that way where they were doing it. And then we had one, which is the one we ended up using, which is that, you know, it's a playback. I don't actually know. It's a good question for our editors if it's an impersonator or the actual tapes, because you're right. The quality is much
better
than the actual Nixon
I wouldn't
Nixon
be surprised.
Tapes.
But they, I think they're actual Nixon quotes, right?
Yes.
I think he said those.
Yo, they're 100% absolutely verbatim what is in the Nixon tapes. And now that we're saying this, I do actually remember listening to recordings of a Nixon impersonator we hired. So I
yeah.
believe, yes,
to
you're
sweeten
correct.
The actual,
yes,
I'm
yes,
sure.
yeah. The,
I'm glad
the,
we worked that out, guys. That
yeah.
was nice.
I'm like, do I have on my iPhone recordings of a Nixon impersonator doing the Nixon tapes? Yes, I do. I did get that email.
Were there other things considered for karaokeing?
Yes, we had, I don't even know if it made it in the cut, but there is, like, we did a thing where she's scrolling. They're like, what should we do? What should we do? And I think this line is in there where they're like, ooh, the Mel Gibson rant. Like, there
nice.
we came up with different horrible, shirty people that they would want to do karaoke to. And then they land on the Nixon tapes as the holy grail.
That's pretty good. Are these things that I was in the writer's room just yesterday again. I'm getting into it. I'm finding my way in the writer's room. You have a bookmarked page on
yes.
the computer full of hilarious video clips that I have already found have made
yes.
their way into episodes.
We have a basically, and I'm sure some of the other writers have spoken about this, but being in a writer's room is just like 12 hours a day of being with the same people, sitting in a conference room, talking nonstop. There's very few, like as a TV writer, there's actually very little time where you're off at least in a comedy room, at your computer writing. It's other than when it's your episode and you go off and you write it, it's mostly you're in a room with 12 other people finding ways to waste time. And so we have web browser, we have a bookmark section, which is just all of our favorite like YouTube videos. Some stuff people would know about, like
mm-hmm.
like John Travolta saying Adele Dazeem is absolutely on that bookmark bar because
yeah.
that's one of the greatest moments in American history. Then there's a collection of other random internet weirdos that we've discovered over the years. And this goes back, I worked on Parks and Rec and so did a few of the other writers and obviously Mike. And so like we've taken clips from Parks and Rec and brought them to Good Place and we're
you
building.
Mean, not clips of the show, but clips.
No,
like
no, we've forgot.
Bits.
We've completely forgotten any actual work we ever did, and
goodness.
All that remains is stupid YouTube clips.
Another shorthand for Bad Place, I think, is the song "Who Let the Dogs Out."
Oh yeah, yeah, they love
dancing
that song.
To
yes.
that song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
is the
yes.
best thing
yeah.
I've ever seen.
One thing, and you may not know this, but I'm always fascinated by this. Do you know what it cost to use that song for 4 seconds?
No, I wonder. I don't.
I don't know the answer either.
Oh, I
but
bet
it could be that's tens the thing. Of
it's,
thousands
it's,
of dollars.
I'm always shocked when we write a song into an episode and then Morgan, our producer, will come back and be like, yeah, that's $600,000 or whatever, $2 million. Or it's always way more than you think it will be.
How much was it to... for me to sing I Will Survive?
I'm sure that was also a lot of money.
Well, it was me singing, so maybe that was...
No, but even...
You still have the license.
They're so incredibly strict about it. Like, we've even had someone, oh, what if we want them to say a song lyric? And even if you say the song lyric without the music behind it, it's like you're paying because that's like copywritten or whatever.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's so much fun to look back at this episode, to rewatch it, having caught up the end of season one and, of course, season two. Because the torture matrices become very clear when you're looking at it backwards.
Totally.
And you can see that even without Tia's knowledge of it, the character of real Eleanor is, you know, deliberately trying to get at fake Eleanor Shellstrop.
And Chidi.
Yeah. By trying to, you know, worm her way in. As an actor, you were just trying to connect with Will's character, right? You were legitimately trying to...
Yeah.
See if you connected.
Yeah, I had no inkling that there was anything, you know, underhanded going on. My knowledge of that character is that she is the kindest, you know, best human, and is selfless in every way, and, you know, the most giving, the most considerate. So I think when she, you know, is counseling Eleanor, when she tries to convince her that she's in love with Chidi, I think she thought when I was playing her that she genuinely felt like that she was helping her through this issue and that it's okay, even though he's supposed to be my soulmate, you know, here is my friendly advice to you. I was totally unaware, which is great, you know, had I known, that might have colored my performance or sort of my take on the character. So that's why Mike doesn't tell me anything until I need to know.
But it worked so – sorry. It worked so perfectly because the believing that this character was so pure and well-intentioned was the exact type of thing that would gnaw at Eleanor, fake Eleanor, because she gets insecure when people are better than her. That's just her thing. And also the theme of this episode was very much so – her reluctance to ever be part of a group because you have to be vulnerable to do that. And so seeing you as the best person ever, it was like, oh, of course, she belongs here. Like, not me, not some Arizona trash bag. This is the person who belongs here. So the more the audience and we believe that Eleanor, the character, felt that you belong there and were good and perfect and absolutely earned that spot, the more it made her go, yeah, I don't belong here. So screw it. I should just go to the bad place.
That makes me think of the title of the episode, Someone Like Me as a Member. Is that a Groucho Marx quote?
Yeah, it's been like kind of misattributed over the years, I think. But it basically, I believe, comes from it's a Groucho Marx line that he had when he was rejecting membership to the Friars Club, I don't know, way in the 20s or something, and basically said, yeah, I wouldn't want to be part of any club that would have me as a member. it kind of is like it perfectly describes her like mentality, her whole life about groups and joining groups.
There are a couple of firsts in this episode. I believe it's the first time that we meet Bad Janet, isn't it?
I believe this is the first Bad Janet. Yeah,
yeah, and it's a super quick pop involving the words Yafet Ding, which are earworms. Like, we found ourselves after, you know, while we were shooting, saying any sentence in the world, comma, Yafet Ding. Like, would you pass me that latte? Yafet Ding. A lot of Bad Janets. Your dad's salty nuts also is one.
So good. Yeah. I mean, again, writing for bad people, just like horrible douchebags, is so fun. And Bad Janet is just
the worst.
Unnecessarily mean and, the worst.
I love Tahani's response when she says, what is the purpose of having an
unclear,
having
unclear.
It's such an honestly asked question. Too.
Yeah.
She's like,
I don't even understand.
Right. Yeah.
It's just the greatest. Speaking of bad people, Adam Scott does it so well.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
He's
yes.
so gross.
He is amazing. He is such a, as we all probably know, familiar with his work. He's amazing because he can play Ben Wyatt, mm-hmm. like straight man.
From Parks and Rec.
Amazing, sweet, like perfect. And then he can also play this, and it's so different, but he does both so well. It's really amazing.
He's pretty good at it. Let's listen to a clip. Full episodes of The Good Place are available on NBC.com and the NBC app.
Whatever. We got our wires crossed. We picked up the wrong dot. Point is, there are two Eleanors. The nice, boring one is yours. The trash bag is ours. So, trash bag, let's go. Let's hit it. And also, I'm still waiting on that smile, gorgeous.
Trevor.
Where's that smile?
Trevor, how about we negotiate? Maybe give you something else.
What in the world could you have that we would want?
All right, how about a unicorn? Right? I bet you don't have one of those.
No, that is true. Might be fun to skin it alive, eat its raw flesh. Maybe break off the horn, grind it up, snort it. Okay, let's keep talking.
There's a lot to process in there, story-wise. I actually made a note while rewatching this yesterday to talk to the VFX department because there's a shard of toenail that flies.
Oh, yes. I caught that upon rewatching.
Oh, I thought you were saying in your Tom Yong Goon.
No, I caught that there was like a very subtle toenail that flings. Yeah. Yes.
That's got to be VFX.
I mean, he wasn't clipping his toenails, right? I mean, Adam had a real toenail clipper.
He
wouldn't have been. Well, I'm trying to remember. I was on set. I was sitting next to him.
Why don't I remember?
Why don't you know?
It must be VFX. I don't think he.
It's just so perfectly
in the shot that it flies up. Yeah.
We're recording these out of order because of schedule stuff. But two other writers, Dylan and Josh, in the future, pointed out something that I would not have realized. It is such a terrible trait of Adam, too, that he would deliberately, like, put a piece of steak in his mouth mm-hmm. and then talk and allow the steak to fall from his mouth.
Oh, yeah.
It's so disgusting.
And so much of that stuff is, like, all Adam. Just, like, you know, when we shot that dinner scene, he just completely, he knew what this character was. And he was like, oh, yeah, I'm the worst. Like, when we came up with this storyline, it's like, oh, he's the worst dining companion you've ever had. He chews with his mouth full and he clips his toenails and he sends the wine back without even looking at the bottle. Like, it's just, it was great. It was super fun.
Food scenes are hard.
Yeah.
Did you eat soup in this?
I think so.
Okay.
I have a bad habit of forgetting that you're going to do this 18 more times.
Right.
And like, so I forget to do the fake eating and I just eat.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then I realize, I should have just really been faking this the whole time. I'm sure I had some soup, but.
So as an actor, you are supposed to what?
Well, it depends on the actor, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, you're supposed to just chew. What do you do? Do you actually eat?
I try to police my own continuity. Like, I like, you know, you have to reset this scene a billion times. So I'll, like, take one corner that can be replaced or something. Like, if it's, a chicken breast. Like,
right,
I
sure.
can't
right.
believe so, we're talking about this. This is so inside. But it's a thing.
It's definitely a thing.
Because early on, like, in my career, I think I was like, wow, free pancakes. And then, like, 2 hours later, you're like, I want to die.
Yes, yeah, correct.
Like,
yeah.
I've eaten 40 pancakes.
I am so, I know it sounds silly, but I am truly so impressed by like being able to act, but also have the wherewithal to be like, okay, I'm cutting this slice of the chicken breast. That can be easily, like, that's a real skill, my friend.
One of the things that was very sweet in a saccharine way was the word splitsies, too, when you and Eleanor and Chidi offered a splitsies and try each other's things. Like, that was gross to me.
Yeah, like, we were like, what are these two nerds gonna, like, bond about? And it's like, yeah, they say splitsies, of course.
And I think it's really funny and interesting that, you know, considering the pathways, the vectors of torture and stuff, Eleanor, played by Kristen Bell, is made to feel bad that her own sad story isn't sad enough.
Yeah, yeah.
And sort of like being an actor in the waiting room, like, your own story matters, you know what I mean? Like,
right,
so many of the flashbacks show her being defensive, being totally. A loner and yeah. being on her own because she, you know, is afraid to connect because she's afraid to probably be disappointed or betrayed.
Right.
Her story is no less legitimate, but framed against like, oh, yeah. so your parents got right. divorced. That's why you're this awful
totally.
Person.
I mean, she basically her journey that first season is like, you know, she gets to what she thinks is heaven. And she's someone, even though she talks about having a little voice in her head, she's still never really, she was going through life, being not vulnerable, like acting, like you said, a lot of defense mechanisms.
Mm-hmm.
And then meeting Chidi and going through this process, she starts to like examine her actions and her behavior and starts to think about what it is to be a good person. And in doing that, I think, like, as someone who's been in
sure.
a ton of therapy, you start to, like, think about the way you grew up and think of what you experienced. And you're like, oh, right, that person, like, I grew up this way and that affects this. So I imagine Eleanor, deep in her psychology in that journey of season one, you know, started to think like, oh, right, my parents were dirtbags and they didn't provide for me and I had to like be on my own. And so it's such a horrible but good torture that like you get to that point, you start to be like, yeah, I want to be better. I want to be better. I behave this way out of a defense mechanism. And then someone comes along who's like, her story was way worse and
right.
she kind of nailed it in life. She was a perfect person. And it's like, God damn, that's good. That's good torture.
It's good torture. Yeah. My empty fish tank. I mean, just yeah. so yeah. sad.
Rough.
Yeah.
Real rough.
A real
empty
rough
fish
beginning.
Tank abandoned. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know which one was more, you know, like heartbreaking. The one that the dummy sides where she's like in
right.
a, in
yeah.
a being sort of held captive and she only has like the gnats that, you know, like the lice
yeah,
in her
right.
hair. That, she's made friends with them. She's like named them.
Yes.
to being left in a fish tank at a train station in Bangladesh.
Pretty bad. Pretty bad. Yeah. Both not good situations.
I will say it's really fun to play the person that minds, you know, that is like so good hearted that, you know, she's still able to like see the best in people and be wonderful and kind, and even though these horrible, horrible things have happened to her.
It's pretty great.
Yeah.
There are a couple of other firsts. Sean is mentioned for the first time in this as
right.
As being, you know, somebody higher than Michael and then Trevor. And being a fairly scary person. And I love that. I think it's Tahani in the episode
yes.
that goes like,
and his name is Sean.
like,
yes,
is,
yeah, yeah.
Which we bring back later when I'm in walkie-talkie mode with
right, right.
With
that was an example of one of those lines you write and then Jamila, like you can see how you want the actor hopefully to say, and Jamila just knocked it out of the park with that read on that.
Oh, so very good.
So good.
We also are introduced to the concept for the first time of a medium place. Eleanor,
yes.
sort of played by Kristen, sort of throws it off. Out there, like there should be a medium place.
Yes.
I think she's had some drinks. You knew about Mindy St. Clair at that point?
Yeah,
you had broken that.
Everything was pretty much laid out at that point for how the entirety of season one would go. And yes, we wanted to write that in so that it would feel very satisfying to Eleanor when she found out in 12, like, oh my gosh, there actually is a medium place. And I don't know if it made it into the cut. I actually want to say it didn't, but we made sure that when she says that in that scene when she and Adam are drinking at the bar, that you kind of see Adam flinch just a tiny bit because
yeah.
he knows she's hitting on something that she's not totally supposed to know about. I don't quite know if it's in there, but yeah, it was all planned out.
It's almost like the Bad Place crew are running like the world's worst mystery train dinner
yeah,
theater.
Totally, yes.
You know, like,
yeah.
They're all trying not to give away who the
right,
murderer
right.
is.
Right, yeah.
Jason and Janet get a little closer together
yeah,
over this
yeah.
topic of jalapeno poppers, which is sweet. Like, I love him going like, my whole life has been people asking me questions I don't know the answer to, and then going, oh, I know this one.
Yeah, yeah, like, totally. Yeah, it was fun to write this one because this was the first instance, I believe, of like them, like they had, you know, connected and he obviously liked her and like, you know, that she could provide anything for him. But this was the first time where he helps her and Janet, you know, I think he hugs her and Janet goes, why did you do that? And he's like, because you're nice to me. And it's like, it's the first moment. It's a really cool thing because it was the first kind of growth on Darcy, like on Janet's part of like, oh, is she going to actually have feelings about someone else that are beyond just, oh, I exist to serve humans?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So it was cool.
It is cool. It's the most basic level of connection.
Oh, like, yeah. It's
someone who's not human.
Right, right.
And the most basic human.
We always talk where it's like they're two like 10-year-olds, you know, like falling in love, like holding hands for the first time kind of thing.
It's very sweet. At the end of the episode, Jian Yu is, Jason Mendoza is outed because he is seen tapping a keg.
Yes.
So
yes,
the
yes.
jig is up.
And his bud hole is,
is not a prayer sanctuary.
Right.
Yeah.
Has been discovered. And
yeah, Jamila has a really good, like, moment of catching him and standing up from the armchair kind of dramatically being like, let's have a little chat, shall we? Which is, it's a fun, dramatic cliffhanger. Yeah, I
think she's physically intimidating.
She's 100 feet tall.
I believe that Allison Jones called her a giantess.
A giantess?
A giantess.
Yeah. Yes, that's very accurate.
Tia, we'll have you back, obviously, but I don't think we'll have you back before we talk about episode 113. So I want to tell you that one of my favorite things ever is your turn when you burst in and go and you try to do one last, you know, Bamba John, I think, has come first and said, I found a
obscure rule that can save everything.
And then like, buzz off, Bamba John, don't need it. And you come in so earnest. And it's the way you say the word they in one. He goes, no, Vicky, which is the first time we hear the word Vicky, so
it's
funny.
Like,
in that
wait, what? Her name's Vicky?
Right. Oh, it's so like, all right. I guess her name's Vicky. No, Vicky, they figured it out. And you turn and go, they, like, you don't want to give up. Like,
oh,
you're
no,
like,
I'm
they.
Still in.
He goes, they
did
know.
What now?
Right. It's so great.
Thank
and
you.
Then your turn to be pissed is so fun.
Thank you. It was fun. Do you recall that? Well, I'm sure you recall. I kept doing it. And we had to keep redoing it because I wasn't mean enough.
Yeah. Oh, I remember I was on set that day.
And Mike
was
like, listen, it's really good. You're just not, I mean, we need you to be like much meaner. And I was like, okay, I can do this. And like the next take was like when I stormed in and did like a friend's F you.
Suck it.
One of these things.
Oh, yeah.
Like the arm. And everyone was like,
you're tucking your wrist into the elbow of
sorry,
one arm.
Doing the thing from Friends where, like the one arm goes into the elbow of the other arm and instead of flicking someone off. Anyway, I feel like I remember seeing your face, Mark, and everyone else's on set, and they were all like,
in the moment, did it feel too big to you? Were you like, oh,
it
no, this is too
great.
Much?
It felt like liberating. I was like, oh, they want mean. I can be mean. And I just went for it. And I don't, that's not the take we used because I think maybe it was too big ultimately. But I think from that point on where I was like, okay, because I had never met Vicky. I didn't know who Vicky was.
Sure.
So that was like my first inkling, I guess, of who Vicky was going to end up being. But that was a really fun scene. Maybe one of my favorite scenes I've ever gotten to.
Oh my goodness, it's so much fun. I think the way the one that they used in the final cut was you sort of gesticulating with both bladed hands toward your midsection and saying, you can all
suck it.
That's a WWF move.
Is it?
Is that where I got it from?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's where pop culture got it
from.
But
I think that was like a later take after I finally figured out like, oh no, you really need to go for it.
Yeah.
And that's what we landed on. But yeah, it was really a fun day.
An audience question. Tia, if you were like Vicky and got to do one big musical number in front of the whole neighborhood, which song would you, Tia Sirkar, pick?
Great question.
Oh, my gosh. Like, my mind went to actual musical theater.
Sure.
It's so ridiculous. I would do whatever Lola wants from Damn Yankee. Ooh.
Really?
I guess.
That's great.
Yeah, I always wanted to play Lola, even though it doesn't really make sense. But yeah, in my heart of hearts,
you know what?
I would
take
love
that
to play
audition because you never. One.
Listen, guys,
ever.
If there's a Damn no, Yankees yeah. remake, give me a call.
Jen Stansky, what's good?
Okay. All right. What's good? I've had some time to think about it. I'll say this. How do I phrase it? The Unsung Heroes, let's say. And in specifically regards to this show, but also lots of shows I worked on, TV shows are a weird thing where it's like it's a team effort, a lot of teamwork. And there's some people, like a lot of times at the front of shows, you hear about actors and writers and directors and stuff, which is awesome and great. Mm-hmm. But there's hundreds and hundreds of other people who are working on the show and work to make it happen that don't always get the credit or shouted out in a way. And so I would say that what's good and very lucky to work on a show like this, where everyone is nice and kind and also incredibly good at their job, is like seeing people come together and seeing everyone work really hard, even people who maybe don't get a ton of the credit up front. And yeah, I think people who watch TV maybe aren't as aware of that. And it's a nice thing about working in TV, and I wish more people knew about it. So that's what's good.
Tia, what's good?
What's good? I just became aware of this organization called the Hometown Project, which I think is so amazing, and I hope to get more involved with. But they're basically actors and, you know, people, sort of high-profile people, are going to their hometowns and trying to connect with voters to get them excited, people who might not otherwise be involved in politics, get them excited about elections at a local level, state and local level. And I think, you know, these midterms that are coming up are so, so very critical to the future of our country and our society. So it's exciting to me that like I might be able, I mean, it's really for people in swing states, and I'm from Texas. Ah. So I don't know how much I can help exactly, but I feel like it's such an important organization, and the work they're doing is really great, and I'm excited about it. So, you know, that's something exciting and good to me right now, and if you are interested in that in any way, go check out thehometownproject.org.
Tia Sirkar and Jen Statsky, thank you so much.
Thank you
for having me.
And thank you for listening. This has been The Good Place, the podcast. I'm Mark Evan Jackson. Go do something good. Boom, nailed it.
Hi there. The podcast is over. I think what I'm feeling is sadness.
Oh, don't worry, Janet. This podcast is the most perfectly engineered invention since the paperclip.
Fun fact, the man who invented the paperclip is in The Bad Place for tax evasion.
It's available on Apple Podcasts and all major podcasting platforms, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Stop saying podcasts.
Hosted by Mark Evan Jackson.
Produced by Grant Rutter.
Written by Lizzie Pace.
Music composed by David Schwartz. Yay!